Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC Vegas 87, which goes down this Saturday night. I'm pretty sure this was supposed to be the Saudi Arabia card. And again, I don't know if these reports were true, but, you know, there was that report saying that His Excellence of Saudi Arabia did not believe that the card was strong enough for a UFC event, or for the first UFC event at least, to happen in Saudi Arabia. And if those reports were true, you know, you can kind of get that. The card's not the strongest on paper. I'm not saying we're not going to have a great night, because I'm pretty sure that we are, and a lot of these fights do genuinely look very fun. But Saudi Arabia need name value, and I just don't think that they were getting that. And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if the reports were true, but, you know, there's always two sides to every story. But it looks like it's going to be a short and sweet podcast. There's only 10 fights at the minute, and one of those fights is Raul Rosas Jr. and Ricky Tercios, which didn't happen last week, and that should have happened last weekend. He got pulled about 15 minutes from when they were both about to walk out to fight. So that's not going to be, you know, a full breakdown, because I did that last week. I will go over it again, but not in as much detail. And then also Joel Alvarez pulled out against Ludovic Klein. Apparently the UFC still want Ludovic Klein on the card, but we haven't heard anything yet in regards to a replacement there. So, you know, that fight I can't talk about. And then the other fight to mention as well, which proves that this card has been a bit of a mess, but the other fight to mention was Vinicius Oliveira, and he was due, and kind of still is due, to make his UFC debut. He was supposed to fight Yannis Gamori, but again, I think it was late on Saturday night, Oliveira put something on his Instagram story saying that, you know, he's about to fly to Vegas. He is still flying to Vegas. He is in Vegas now, but just as he was about to fly, he got the news saying that Gamori had pulled out injured. So yeah, again, we've heard a report of that. I think it was MMA Fighting have tried to go to the Gamori side to confirm it, and they've been unable to confirm it. So you'll still see, at the time of recording this podcast, you'll still see that fight listed on, you know, the all the places, Topology, Sherdog, UFC website, I believe. So that fight, to my knowledge, is not on, because Gamori has been reported out, at least by MMA Fighting, at least on one side. So I'm not going to sit here and break that fight down either. So yeah, should be a short and sweet podcast after a longer than normal introduction to the podcast. And very quickly, just before we jump into the breakdowns, if you want to jump into the action this weekend, then make sure you do at mmaplay365.com. We've got plenty on there for everybody, including, you know, a $1.99 money back guarantee dog of the week package. We've got subscriptions just for one event, a monthly subscription, a very reduced priced annual subscription as well, that's very affordable. Inside all of those subscriptions, next event monthly and annual, you get the full handicapper breakdowns, the official bets, fun parlays, fun parlay options to build your own parlays. That's all from myself as the handicapper. And then included still is all the Baze AI predictions from our UFC prediction software, which includes the top six feature as well, where we pull out the top six percentages from three different categories: the win only, the win plus method of victory, and then the win plus method of victory plus round as well. So you get plenty of value for your money in all those subscriptions. So if you are wanting to have some fun this weekend, again, that's mmaplay365.com. And after the way longer introduction than normal, we get straight into these breakdowns. And in the main event, we've got five rounds in the heavyweight division between Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Shamil Gaziev. Now, it's one of those where I kind of get people's complaints when it comes to these fights and five rounds, because the likelihood is it doesn't go past three rounds anyway. So you could argue it's a bit of a waste booking it for five rounds when we're potentially not going to need rounds four and five. However, with that being said, you know, crazier things have happened. Fights that we thought absolutely wouldn't go late have gone late. Of course, it's the snooze fest of Ngannou and Derek Lewis is one example. And then we've seen guys like Johnny Walker and Thiago Santos, where we didn't think was going anywhere close to, you know, even probably even into round two, and we saw five rounds of that. So yeah, I suppose you can never say never, but it's very unlikely, in my opinion, that this goes five rounds. I think if it does start to go late, the likes of Shamil Gaziev, who I don't think has major cardio issues, and I will touch upon that in a little bit more detail in a minute, but I think that Gaziev is the more likely fighter to slow down because of the output. So if we do see this fight start to hit maybe the third round, then Rozenstruik could potentially come on strong and maybe get that late finish. But like I said, I'm predicting that it doesn't go past three. I think we're either going to see Gaziev either early or mid, and then if it doesn't happen early mid for Gaziev, then maybe Rozenstruik late, but late before the fourth round. I think if we do start seeing four and five rounds here, I think both fighters will be tired to the point where, you know, the knockout power is significantly reduced and they're going to struggle to throw volume, and then that's probably going to lead to a decision, which again I don't see happening. But if it does get out of round three, then it probably is more likely to hit the scorecards than there to be a finish in rounds four or five, at least, you know, from the outset and pre-fight to me anyway. But in regards to Gaziev's cardio, I said this for his UFC debut. I cashed him as an underdog in his UFC debut, easy money. And I said this in the breakdown prior to that fight, that Gaziev's cardio and gas tank has been very over exaggerated by the commentary in the Dana White Contender Series fight. Now, yes, he did tire out, but he was still working. He still won the fight that he supposedly gassed out horrifically and couldn't continue to fight to any sort of great measure or to any sort of great extent. He still managed to win that fight. I do think his cardio is over exaggerated. And then even on his walkout to his UFC debut, again, they were talking about how this cardio and gas tank is devastatingly bad. And again, I think it's over exaggerated. And then even after round one, I think it was Joe Rogan was saying that, oh, Gaziev's, you know, sucking air and he looks, you know, he looks like he's breathing really heavy and he's not got much left in him after round one. And even I looked at Gaziev at that point and thought, you know, yeah, he might be a bit tired. He's just output a shit ton of volume in round one, but he doesn't look horrific. And then he got the finish in the second round that he supposedly was gassed out already in anyway. So again, I think the cardio aspect of Gaziev is over exaggerated. I'm not saying it's completely untrue, because again, like I said, we have seen him slow down, especially when he wrestles really heavily and, you know, there's a lot of resistance to that wrestling from his opponent's side. But I don't think his cardio is as horrific as, you know, it's made out to be, is what I'm trying to say. Now, in this fight, I think that stylistically, Gaziev holds the edge in the style versus style, because look, both fighters hit stupidly hard. They hit ridiculously hard. Like, Rozenstruik's got that touch of death. We've known that for a long time. Kickboxing background, he ain't going to attempt a takedown. I don't think he's ever attempted a takedown in the UFC. Everything's been trying to keep it stood up for Rozenstruik. He does have that touch of death, but you look at Shamil Gaziev. Gaziev's got ridiculous knockout power as well. Pre-UFC, he was dead in dudes, left hand, right hand, was landing these shots that didn't look like they had a stupid amount of power on them, but they definitely had a stupid amount of power on them because he was knocking his opponents out cold. UFC debut, he got the TKO. It wasn't a clean knockout, but he absolutely battered Martin Budaj. And that showed a really good fight IQ, in my opinion, because he could have just gone balls to the wall and completely emptied a gas tank and tried to get Budaj out of there. But although he was putting a lot of power into his shots, he was racking up good volume. He managed his pace, in my opinion. So in this fight, either fighter could knock each other out, but it's where you get those extra edges. And those extra edges come with Shamil Gaziev, because Gaziev has got good wrestling, he's got a good top game as well. Those have been Rozenstruik's real weaknesses over the years, like massively weak and deficient in those areas. He has had some fights where he's looked okay in regards to a get-up game, and, you know, like the Curtis Blaydes fight, he got up a couple of times against Curtis Blaydes, but, like, you look at the takedowns that Rozenstruik gets hit on, and some of those takedowns are really sloppy. They're shot from too far out. They're shooting more towards the shins than they are even the knees or behind the top of the legs. Like, some of these takedown entries on Rozenstruik are really poorly timed, but they can still be completed. So again, from the center of the cage perspective, Rozenstruik is very susceptible to being taken down, and you don't need a good entry or a committed be too committed to complete to be able to get Rozenstruik down. Against the cage, Rozenstruik seems to have a little bit of better defense, but again, Shamil Gaziev, he's big, he's more physical, he's going to have, in my opinion, a strength advantage in this fight, although that's always subjective pre-fight. It's one of the hardest things to predict, but I do think due to the sheer size and the fact that Gaziev is from Dagestan, that he's going to be ridiculously strong. So even against the cage, I think he gets takedowns. Once he gets on top of Rozenstruik, the way Gaziev lays heavy is unreal. Like, Curtis Blaydes, for example, will lay heavy, but he will also try and transition. I just don't think he lays as heavy as Gaziev. Gaziev has got that real top heavy pressure game, and if what's going to happen is Rozenstruik will try and turn to his back and stand back up, and Gaziev will start sinking hooks in and start getting his grappling game going. So I think it's a tough fight for Rozenstruik outside of the knockout. Like, a flash KO on either side, like I've said, can happen. But outside of a flash KO, Gaziev's just the much better fighter. The other thing to mention as well is Rozenstruik, yeah, he's got this, you know, this massive strength of schedule. He's fought some of the best fighters in the UFC, but he loses against those best fighters in the UFC. The fighters that he beats in the UFC are either low level now or not even on the roster at all. Some of them aren't even fighting at all. Some of them have retired. So with Rozenstruik, he tends to beat the guys that he absolutely should beat, the bottom of the barrel guys or the guys on the way out. Once he has that step up in competition and fights somebody whose skill set is better, then that's when he struggles. Now, although Gaziev doesn't have as great of a strength of schedule as a Rozenstruik, from a skill set perspective, Gaziev is absolutely up there. He's a solid striker. He's got good wrestling, good grappling. He's a very good fighter stylistically, and I do think that he's going to have enough edges in this fight. If he's smart and comes out here and shoots a takedown, gets an easy takedown straight away, doesn't exert any energy getting that takedown, spends a lot of time on top of Rozenstruik, he could find the ground and pound, he could find a submission, or he could just sit on top of Rozenstruik for the rest of that round. So I think, yeah, look, it's always dangerous backing against Rozenstruik because of the power, the touch of death power. It can absolutely hit any fighter and knock them out. But when we're looking at this skill set for skill set, style versus style, it's hard to look past Gaziev. So for those reasons, I'm picking Shamil Gaziev to win this fight. And in the next fight, in the co-main event, we've got Vitor Petrino versus Tyson Pedro. Now, Petrino, I really like Petrino as a fighter. I did fade him last time out. I bet against him. I bet on Modestus Bukauskas, but I also bet on Modestus Bukauskas at plus 240, and he did not close anywhere close to that. It was more of a line issue. Like, I've said this before, I never fall in love. When it comes to betting, I never fall in love with a winner or a loser. I fall in love with, you know, what I'm doing in regards to getting the best betting line, getting value. And I just didn't think that at the time, Vitor Petrino had proved that Modestus Bukauskas should be a plus 240 underdog to him. So that's the reason why I bet Bukauskas. But that's not a knock on Petrino. Like, I really like Petrino as a fighter. I think that he's got really hard, powerful strikes. He fights aggressively, combinations. He's got good takedowns. He's got ground and pound. He's got a submission game. He can put it all together. Now, admittedly, we did see more of his game against Bukauskas. And, you know, Bukauskas, in my opinion, did have his moments against Petrino. But I think Petrino's only getting better and better. Now, if this fight, I mean, he's a favourite again against Tyson Pedro. If this fight was before the Bukauskas fight, then I would probably be betting Tyson Pedro here. But I feel like I've kind of learnt my lesson a little bit. The line's not as wide as what it was with Bukauskas. I kind of have learnt my lesson a little bit with Petrino. Probably sit this one out. I do actually think that this could be a more dangerous fight for Petrino than what Bukauskas was. Because Pedro, although Pedro did lose to Bukauskas, I believe that Pedro holds more power than Bukauskas did. I think Pedro's defensive grappling and defensive wrestling is probably a little bit better than Bukauskas as well. It's just styles make fights, and Bukauskas was the fighter that beat Pedro at the time. But I think that Petrino will have a harder time with Pedro than he did with Bukauskas. But still, I feel like the UFC are building Petrino up in the right way. I think he's a fighter, like I say, that's super explosive, that's great everywhere, but also got a very unpredictable gas tank in regards to you look at him and predict that he doesn't have a good gas tank, and he actually really does. Not only is he absolutely stacked huge with, you know, the muscle, but he's also a very explosive fighter, and a combination of those two at the weight that he fights at and how big he is should lead to bad gas tank, but it really doesn't. I think that Petrino, this could be a bit of a coming out fight for him here. Like I say, he had some moments against Bukauskas that didn't look great, but eventually he got that big knockout. I think if he can scalp Tyson Pedro's name here, look good in doing so, then I think he's on his way to potentially having a top 15 fight, which is where a lot of people, I think, are seeing him, and I think is where the UFC are seeing him. I know this card's not the strongest on paper, but putting him in there in the co-main event spot does tell you that the UFC wants some eyes on Petrino from a style perspective. Again, it's in the light heavyweight division, and just like I said with the heavyweight fight in the previous breakdown, a knockout, a flash knockout can happen at these sort of weights, higher up, light heavyweight, heavyweight. I mean, flash knockouts can happen, to be fair, in any weight class. You know, these are elite fighters with 4 ounce gloves, but obviously at light heavyweight, the chances of a flash knockout is elevated. Outside of that, though, I think Petrino's volume is going to be greater than Pedro's. Then when he's mixing in the wrestling, getting takedowns, some top control time, I'm not saying he holds Tyson Pedro down for long periods, but it's a possibility. If he doesn't, Pedro gets back up, Petrino can reshoot. I think that Petrino's just going to be a bit of a nightmare here for Pedro. Like I said, as long as Petrino mixes it up between the volume and then the level changes, the wrestling, I don't think Pedro is able to get going and get into any sort of flow state with that sort of fighter in front of him. And for that reason, I do think it's going to be a problem for him. So for all those reasons that I've mentioned, I'm picking Vitor Petrino to win this fight. And in the next fight in the flyweight division, we've got Alex Perez versus Mohamed Mokaev. Quite uncanny, to be honest, because we've got Alex Perez and Matt Schnell on this card. And yeah, it's funny because those two were supposed to fight like 8 times. Both fighters had different moments where they were pulling out, injured or missing weight or ill or whatever. That fight couldn't happen. And yeah, it's funny because we get both fighters on the same card. I think it actually happened with Habib and Tony Ferguson years ago as well, where they just couldn't fight each other. But then, you know, about a year or so after the UFC gave up on the fight, they were actually on the same card fighting different opponents. So, yeah, it's quite funny. Alex Perez against Mohamed Mokaev. You've always got to have concerns with Alex Perez actually hitting the scales and this fight going ahead. So it's going to be interesting to see if that actually happens. And look, that's not a complete knock on Perez. Like I say, you can't really predict injury and illness, but the weight cut in illness due to weight cutting is something that I think can fall into the category of being the fighter's fault, because at some point, if that's what keeps happening and if that's what's stopping you fighting, then you've just got to move up in weight. You can't just keep fighting at that weight and keep on getting ill and risking not fighting at all. So yeah, look, if it's a general illness, if it's a general injury, that can't be helped. Perez has been really unlucky with, you know, his UFC career in regards to fights that should have happened that never did. So I'm really hoping this fight does happen. I think it's a coming out party for Mokaev, though. Look, Mokaev is one of those fighters, and we had it for years with Habib. Not that it was a little different with Habib. Not that people didn't rate Habib or, you know, believe that he was good as he actually was, but a lot of people faded Habib due to the betting line, or, you know, he's eventually due a loss and all this sort of stuff. And I kind of feel that Mokaev is within that same category, but because Mokaev's not as established right now as what Habib was towards the end of his career, not only are people fading Mokaev a little bit, but they're also not believing that the skill set's there until they see it. But the problem with that is we're seeing the development of Mokaev, so we're seeing the advancement of the skill set fight by fight. And I do believe that he's a very tough fighter to beat. And, you know, that there's proof of that. You know, there's fighters that have almost got Mokaev out of there. Malcolm Gordon almost got him out of there. And then there was the guy with the knee bar, I forget his name, almost got him out of there. But none of these guys actually are. And then Mokaev's not only winning those fights, coming back and winning those fights, but he's finishing them as well. So I think with Alex Perez, it's a massive step up in competition for Mokaev, but it's one that's needed and one that's earned at the same time. Perez is definitely better, miles better than anybody that Mokaev's fought. Perez also brings to the table good striking, good wrestling, good grappling, a good low kick, and he's the complete fighter. When he's on it, when he's fit, when he's healthy, when he's consistently active, Alex Perez is one of the best fighters in the division without a shadow of a doubt. But the problem is, he's not shown that he's been fit and healthy lately. He's not had the consistency of fights. You know, he constantly has fights that are cancelled. And then when he did have his last fight, he got beat very, very quickly. Now, admittedly, that last fight that I'm talking about is the current flyweight champion, Alejandro Pantoja. So I suppose there's no real shame there. But, you know, I'm just looking at Alex Perez's topology now. And from 2020, the first fight I'm looking at is a cancelled fight with Brandon Moreno. Then he goes in there against Davison Figueiredo, gets choked out in round one with the guillotine very quickly. Then the cancelled fights, Matt Schnell, Askar Askarov, Matt Schnell, Askar Askarov. Those are all cancelled fights, one after the other. Then he fights Pantoja, loses again in round one very quickly. Then cancelled fights, Albazi, Kaikara France, Manel Karp. So it's really tough to back Alex Perez in a fight where, you know, there's been so many issues. Like I said, not all on his side, maybe not all his fault, but there's so many issues with him. He's not active, he's not consistent. I think he's probably lost that form that he went into the Davison Figueiredo fight with. And then now he's fighting a young, hungry bull like Mokaev. I do think that he's going to have moments in this fight. I don't think it's going to be another quick finish. I really, really don't. It's not going to be a Pantoja or a Davison Figueiredo. The fight will get stretched, so we'll get to see a bit more of Perez. Maybe he starts, you know, being more comfortable the longer, the later the fight goes, when he's got his feet wet back in the cage a little bit. But I'm struggling to pick against Mokaev here, because Mokaev's got good wrestling himself. He's got good grappling, good scrambles. His striking's improving. I do think both fighters match up really well, but I think all the momentum and consistency and form is on the side of Mokaev. Mokaev's the young, hungry fighter that's getting better from fight to fight as well. And I just think it's not the right time for Alex Perez to be fighting Mokaev. If Perez was coming into this fight on a 3-fight win streak, fought 3 times last year against mid to good level competition, then maybe we'll look at a different prediction. But like I say, Mokaev's got the skill sets to be able to deal with what Perez brings to the cage, where Perez is strongest. And then when you add in all the other types of stuff, some of it intangible, I just, like I say, I'm having a hard time looking past Mokaev here. I think it's the right time for Mokaev to fight somebody like Alex Perez and take a good name like Alex Perez as well. For all those reasons that I've mentioned, I'm picking Mohamed Mokaev to win this fight. And in the next fight, I've just mentioned him at the start of the previous breakdown of the last fight, we've got Matt Schnell versus Steve Ursag. And I think this fight is going to be absolute fireworks. I don't anticipate it being any other way. Steve Ursag surprised a lot of people in the UFC to date. He came into the UFC short notice to fight David Dvorak, who I think was at the time was maybe ranked 10th. I'm sure he was a top 10 ranked fighter. Ursag stepped in on short notice, massive underdog as you'd imagine, and absolutely battered him. And then he goes into a fight. Steve Ursag does, after that fight, faces Alessandro Costa, who isn't or didn't have the, you know, the ranking or the rating of a David Dvorak, but Alessandro Costa, in my opinion, is one of the top, or will be one of the top fighters in the division, given time for him to settle into the UFC himself and get a win streak together. I think that Costa's skill set is very, very good. Ursag beat him as well. So Steve Ursag is riding this huge momentum at the minute. He's a fighter that's, again, he's not just getting wins, but he's exciting. His striking's not completely clean, but it's car crash type of striking where he'll just throw insane power, big body kicks, big punches, because if you take him down, he doesn't care. It's a lot like Brandon Royval, the way that I break his fights down. Does not care if you take him down, because his grappling is where his bread and butter is and where he prefers to fight. So Ursag doesn't mind going balls to the wall, take me down. And when once the fight hits the mat, Ursag's cool with that. Matt Schnell, very similar fighter, to be fair. He comes hard with good boxing, good speed, good pace. And again, he's got a really good grappling game. Take me down. Once you take him down, he'll start trying to hit, well, he'll initially start with a guillotine, then start to try and hit triangles. His legs will be up looking for submissions. And this fight, I think, is just so well matched. I think it's got all the makings to be the fight of the night. I think Schnell, Erceg, whether it's striking, wrestling, grappling, it's going to be 100 mile an hour, tons of effort, activity, volume, scrambles, transitions. It's just got it all. As for where they match up stylistically, look, I think that striking-wise, Schnell's the cleaner striker. I think Erceg's the more efficient striker. And I say this time after time, judges do not score technique. They don't care if your jab is crisper than the other person's jab or if your right hand is, you know, sharper than the other person's right hand. They score volume, they score accuracy, they score efficiency. And I think that Steve Erceg ticks that box just a little bit better than Schnell. When it comes to the wrestling and grappling, I think they're both going to have some great moments on the mat, but I think Schnell makes some unforced errors on the mat. He makes a little bit more, well, he takes more chances on the mat and therefore can lead to more mistakes, especially at this level in the UFC. I think Erceg's the quality of grappler that's going to be able to capitalize on any mistakes that Schnell might make, any unforced errors, and be able to punish Matt Schnell for that. On the flip side, Erceg, I feel, is more controlled. I think he does take chances, but he just seems to make less errors, and he doesn't give away position, and he doesn't put himself in dangerous positions on the mat either. And I think, again, that's probably going to show on the night as well. So along with the striking efficiency and the fact that Erceg just seems to be a little bit more controlled and a little bit less error prone when it comes to positioning and submissions on the mat, I do feel that Erceg should be able to beat Matt Schnell, but it's going to be a phenomenal fight. From a prediction perspective, I'm picking Steve Erceg to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Umar Nurmagomedov versus the newcomer Behzat Almakhan. Now, it's a bit strange that we're dealing with Umar Nurmagomedov, who was supposed to fight Corey Sandhagen, who was at the top of the division fighting a UFC debutant. Now, according to Umar Nurmagomedov's management, Nurmagomedov, or Umar, shall we say, just for ease of me talking, Umar supposed to be harder to match at the minute than any of the previous clients, big clients of the management. So Kamaru Usman and Makhachev and Khabib, Umar Nurmagomedov is supposed to be very difficult to match. A lot of fighters don't want it. So the UFC have resorted to getting a debut fighter in, which is quite embarrassing, if I'm being honest. And look, if this is the case that Umar is unable to get fights in the UFC, just give him a title shot. I said the same thing when nobody would fight Usman years ago. Just make him leapfrog the queue, give him a title shot. It'll piss everybody off in the division, but it'll also piss the fighters off that are likely the fighters that are saying no to fighting him. You know, make a point out of it. You don't want to fight him, that's fine. He's going to leapfrog you. Title shot. And the champion can't say no. So, yeah, look, those are my thoughts on these situations. But the fact that the UFC have had to draft a newcomer in to fight Umar Nurmagomedov is a bit of a joke. However, you look at the newcomer, Behzat Almakhan, this kid is good, and this kid will beat a lot of fighters in the division. This kid will be, in my opinion, in the top 10, top 5, given, you know, 12, 18 months. He's just having to, you know, suck this fight up as his first fight in the UFC. But I'm telling you, this fight's going to be competitive. And I'll also say this, I'm glad that I get this podcast out quite early, because I feel a lot of people are going to make these similar comparisons, is this fight to me screams an absolute identical stylistic fight and an identical scenario to what we had when Islam Makhachev fought Armin Sarukian for Sarukian's UFC debut. Everybody thought the same thing. Oh my God, Makhachev, he's fighting a debut guy. But this debut guy is actually really good and puts up a really good fight. And you're like, holy shit, this debut guy is actually going to go on to do some really good things. And I actually feel like this is, like I said, it's not only the same scenario, but it's a similar type of fight. I think Almakhan's going to have good moments against Nurmagomedov. I think the scrambles here are going to be insane. I think the fight's going to be insane. I think Nurmagomedov's going to end up comfortably edging out every round, but Almakhan's going to come out of this fight with his stock ridiculously raised because of the performance he's been able to put in against Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov is not going to have an easy time here, but he's also going to have a time where I think it's going to bring the best out of him, and I think he's going to shine because of it. Again, exactly like Makhachev and Sarukian. Sarukian, I think, was the first guy to ever take Makhachev down. And then the scrambles on top of that, it's just Makhachev was just that bit better everywhere, just edged him out. And I think we're going to see the same here. I think Nurmagomedov is going to have a tough time. He's going to have an absolute cat in there against him who's going to be shooting takedowns, that's going to be hitting scrambles and looking for reversals. I think he's going to cause Nurmagomedov problems, but Nurmagomedov is going to put that nail in the coffin of each round and probably win a comfortable, in the end, a comfortable 30-27. But Almakhan, I'm telling you, this kid is going to be an absolute nightmare to deal with. Once he gets this Nurmagomedov job passed, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of fighters not putting the hand up to fight Almakhan, because Almakhan, off a loss here, is going to have to go back to fighting outside of the top 15. And I think he blitzes through, you know, most fighters outside of the top 15. It'll not be long before we see him ranked. It's going to be a great fight, a phenomenal fight. But I have to side with Umar Nurmagomedov. I don't think it's a fight that he actually loses. So for those reasons, I'm picking Umar Nurmagomedov to win this fight. And the next fight on the list, we've got Raul Rosas Jr. versus Ricky Tercios. As I said in the introduction, this fight was supposed to happen last week, about 15 minutes before they were due to fight. It was announced that the fight was off and cancelled due to a sickness issue on the side of Rosas Jr., likely just a stomach bug, maybe just feeling a little bit sick. I'm not too sure. Apparently did want to fight, but, you know, it was his team, his corner, that pulled him from the fight due to, you know, the health concerns. And, you know, you can get that. I don't know what weight they're actually going to be fighting at this weekend. And I did actually see Ricky Tercios put a post out saying that he's on Instagram or something, that he's not received a contract for this date, a new date for this fight. But I can't see it being an issue, like the UFC have announced it. So, you know, obviously the UFC have got a bit of a reputation for announcing fights before the contracts are signed, but, you know, they tend to get the job done more often than not. So, yeah, look, I'm not going to go into the breakdown from a massive, you know, in-depth perspective. If you want this breakdown, you can just jump to the podcast previously. Obviously, if you're listening on YouTube, it'll just be the last video that was posted. If you're listening on a podcast platform, then just search on our profile at MMA Play 365 and it'll be the, you know, the podcast link prior to this one. So yeah, look, I think Rosas Jr. wins the fight. I think that if the fight didn't happen with Christian Rodriguez, I think this might be the fight that Rosas Jr. loses, but I think Rosas Jr. will have learned a lot from that fight with Rodriguez in regards to cardio, pacing, overdoing it, and being matched from a stylistic perspective, because I think Tercios does match him from a stylistic perspective. And that's why I think that if Rosas Jr. hadn't experienced the Christian Rodriguez fight, this would likely be the fight that, you know, he's exposed a little bit, or, you know, has that lesson where he learns, comes back and gets better. Remember, he's only 19 years old, so he will be getting better from fight to fight anyway. But I just genuinely think at this point, it's, you know, he's took that loss from Rodriguez. He's learned a lot. Striking, he's got knockout power. I think the wrestling and grappling approach is going to be too much for Tercios to deal with in regards to being relentless. I think Tercios is going to do some good work early on, but the longer that Rosas Jr. keeps at it, keeps scrambling, keeps grappling, I think he eventually breaks Tercios. And again, I don't think it's an easy thing to do, but I think Rosas Jr. is on that level where, you know, he's took that loss that he's learned from, and now he's got this test here against a very similar fighter to the guy that he lost against, and now it's his time to overcome it. I think he does that. I think he looks great in doing so. And for those reasons, I'm picking Raul Rosas Jr. to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Eric Anders versus Jamie Pickett. And it's a tough one for Pickett, this, because I think that Jamie Pickett needs to win this fight. He's on a 4-fight losing streak, which we all know what happens when you get that 5th fight. To be fair, more often than not, when you get that 4th fight in a row that you lose in the UFC, you don't normally get the 5th fight. So it does seem like Pickett's back. It will be against the wall for this fight. He's also 2-6 in the UFC, his record overall 13-10. So I think it's a fight that he needs to win, but I do worry for him in this fight because he's fighting Eric Anders, who is, in my opinion, just a better fighter everywhere. Now, Pickett, to be fair to him, he did surprise us, or at least me, with the Strapoli fight. I did expect Strapoli to win that fight, but again, Strapoli's no longer with the UFC. Pickett's only other win in the UFC is Joseph Holmes. I don't think Holmes is in the UFC anymore, so yeah, it's a tough one. I think that Pickett is probably lower. Well, he is lower end of the UFC. He's a UFC caliber fighter. I think the jury might be out on that one. Look, Eric Anders is the better fighter. I think his striking's better, wrestling's better, grappling's better. He's more active, more volume. The only area where I think that Pickett might have an advantage here is cardio. And that's if Anders overexerts himself in this fight. But if he overexerts himself, he probably does it for a reason and takes Pickett out of there anyway. So, look, if Anders comes in here, expends a lot of cardio, puts a storm on Pickett, Pickett can weather it, then maybe Pickett can, you know, start to get some strikes off himself and start to slowly pull away with the fight. But I just don't see it. Like I say, I think Anders is a better quality fighter. He's fought and beaten better level of competition than Jamie Pickett as well. Jamie Pickett's back's against the wall. There's just so much upside, and so for Anders, there's a lot of downside for Jamie Pickett. And like I suppose you can never be too confident, because this is MMA and this is the type of fight that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be confident in, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was this was the, you know, quote unquote shock. But look, I don't see it. I think Anders, like I said, is better everywhere, fought a better level of competition, and wherever this fight goes, he should be beating Pickett. So for those reasons, I'm picking Eric Anders to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Javid Basharat versus Ayman Zahabi. I say this all the time with the Basharat brothers, both Javid and Farid are just very, very good. They're really, really good all-round type of fighters. They're solid strikers, solid wrestlers, solid grapplers. Now, normally, you can make the argument that, you know, a fighter that's great everywhere but doesn't specialise in one specific area will only get so far. And I've said that before, but that's only really a thing when the fighter that's great everywhere has some defensive holes. And I just don't think the Basharat brothers do, or at least they haven't fought the level of competition to be able to expose those gaps in the styles and in the skill sets. They're just too good. And they actually remind me of like a Bilal Muhammad. And again, same thing with Bilal Muhammad. Great everywhere, doesn't really have too many weaknesses. Is he beatable? Yes, he is. But he's also at the top of the division and potentially on the cusp of fighting for a title. And the UFC are doing a real slow build-up with both these Basharat brothers. And I think Javid's the better out of the two, at least at the minute. And I think Ayman Zahabi's in for a tough fight here, because I just don't see how he beats Basharat. I don't think he's a better striker. Even when you look at the striking technically, I don't think he's better. I don't think he's faster or more elusive. And I don't think he's going to output more volume. Then when it comes to the wrestling, I think Basharat's both the offense and defensive wrestling side of Basharat is better than Zahabi's offensive and defensive wrestling as well. So, like I say, Basharat's offense wrestling is better than Zahabi's defensive wrestling, and Basharat's defensive wrestling is better than Zahabi's offensive wrestling. So if anyone's shooting takedowns here and getting on top, I think that's Basharat. And then when you look at the grappling, I think Basharat's the better grappler. I don't think Zahabi's going to be able to get back up to his feet easily. If he does, I think Basharat could reshoot, take him back down, mat return. And I don't think Zahabi's hitting sweeps or scrambles either. So even when you look at cardio, like I've just said with Anders and Pickett, maybe, you know, does Basharat come out and empty the gas tank and Zahabi take over? I don't think we even get that in this fight, because Basharat's cardio is better, and I don't think he overexerts himself to that point anyway. It's just a tough fight for Zahabi. I'm intrigued to see what sort of game plan he goes into the fight with, because I just genuinely don't feel that he's going to have an advantage anywhere in this fight. It's a tough one. I'm interested to see Zahabi's approach to the fight, but from a prediction perspective, I can't look past Basharat here. I'm picking Javid Basharat to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Loic Rajabov versus Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi making his UFC debut. That is a very big mouthful, and I will not be saying that full name throughout the breakdown. We'll be calling him Al-Sawadi. So look, Al-Sawadi is coming into the UFC, making his debut off that great win against George Hardwick in the Contender Series, where Hardwick was like a minus 400 favourite, and Sawadi beat him comfortably over three rounds, 30-27. And it did surprise a lot of people, because Hardwick was on this like absolute tear, Cage Warriors champion. We all know about these Cage Warriors champions. They come in, they're great everywhere, they perform, they've been battle tested. But to be fair, we normally see that as a build-up type of thing once that Cage Warriors champion signs to the UFC outright. In Cage Warriors, it's basically a one-fight shootout because you've got one opportunity. You know, if you sign to UFC and you've got four fights and you drop that first fight, well, that's not horrific. You know, come back in your next fight, build, get better. But in the Contender Series, you don't have that opportunity. So that's a slight difference. But look, Al Sulwadi looked great in that fight against Hardwick. And here against Rajabov, he's fighting a Rajabov that's coming off that brutal beatdown of Matthews Rybetski, and Rybetski just absolutely powerhoused Rajabov. I bet Rybetski in that fight, I think I got him at like minus 120 or minus 125, something that low, and he looked like a minus 400, 500 favourite in there. And I knew that Rybetski had that style to beat Rajabov because he had great wrestling. He was an underrated grappler, and Rybetski is the exact type of fighter that Rajabov is going to struggle against. Now, against Al Sulwadi's got similar stylistic traits. You know, he likes to wrestle. He's a good grappler himself. He competes in grappling. But is he at the level of Rybetski? I don't think he is. From a striking perspective, I don't think he's going to be as dangerous as Rybetski. I don't think he's going to have the power, output, and cardio all mixed together. I mean, Al Sulwadi's got good cardio, but Rybetski had that mixture of being aggressive, power, and having good cardio also. And I just think Rybetski was a nightmare stylistic matchup for Rajabov, and I just don't think that Sulwadi is, even though he does, like I've already said, possess some of the stylistic traits that Rybetski possesses. But Rajabov for me is going to be the bigger fighter in here. He's going to be more physical, a bit stronger. The other thing as well is, outside of that beatdown from Rybetski, like, Rajabov took a very short notice fight against Esteban Ribovic, who isn't a bad fighter himself, but in that short notice fight that he didn't have a camp for, he still hit 11 takedowns. He still output a really high pace in the fight. And yeah, he tired out towards the end, but short notice, 11 takedowns, knockdowns, powerful strikes. Of course, like, the only surprise is that Rajabov didn't tire out earlier in that fight. And then when you look at his PFL lightweight final as well, that was a bad look from a gas tank perspective as well. But then you hear that he was actually ill during that fight. And again, do you take it with a pinch of salt? I don't know. But he did look very off. And maybe the illness did kill him in a 5-round fight. So I don't think the cardio is going to be as much of an issue here. I think Rajabov hits hard. He's aggressive. He's going to be bigger, more physical and stronger. Should be able to push Al Sulwadi back. And then if either fighter's wrestling here, it's going to be the fighter moving forward, not the fighter on the back foot. So if Rajabov, I'm not sure if he's got better grappling than Al Sulwadi, but I at least think that he can match him. So what that means is Al Sulwadi probably isn't hitting sweeps and reversals and then putting Rajabov on Rajabov's back after getting taken down. I think that the worst case scenario for Rajabov is he gets the takedown and Al Sulwadi makes his way back up to his feet and then he has to take him down again. But again, like, Rajabov's shown he can be relentless and do that. I think if he can shut the game down of Al Sulwadi, force him backwards, get him defensively wrestling rather than Al Sulwadi be offensively wrestling, it completely eliminates Al Sulwadi's game. And I kind of feel that Rajabov's got those stylistic advantages in this fight. So for those reasons, I'm picking Loic Rajabov to win this fight. And in the final fight to break down, we've got Christian Leroy Duncan versus Claudio Ribeiro. Now, I bet Claudio Ribeiro last time out. I bet him at like plus 200 or something against Roman Kopylov, given that Claudio Ribeiro was going to get the fight that he wants in regards to not having to deal with takedowns and just being able to fight a striker. And to be fair, he did have Kopylov hurt quite badly in that fight, but Kopylov landed that head kick from hell, knocked him out cold, and that was all she wrote. Now here, Christian Leroy Duncan is now going to have the fight that he wants. He's not going to have to deal with getting taken down. He's going to be able to be in this fight and, you know, fight a striking fight, because Ribeiro, it's very unlikely that Ribeiro's going to shoot a takedown. Now, I think that Leroy Duncan's got a good fight in this fight, and the reason being is Ribeiro's got this Muay Thai style where it's more slow-paced, you know, patient, stalking approach, standing up straight, And with the way that Leroy Duncan moves in and out of range, elusive, evasive, hitting weird angles, I think he's just going to cause a lot of frustration on Ribeiro's part if Ribeiro can't hit him. If Duncan's constantly moving and not being there to be hit, I think Ribeiro then starts to come out of his style and out of his game and starts chasing Duncan, getting frustrated and doing things he wouldn't normally do to be able to try and land on him just to change things up. And all that's going to do is take Ribeiro out of his comfort zone, play more into the game of Duncan. Duncan's going to land more on him. And I think this is a fight where Christian Leroy Duncan can actually look really good in. And I know that Duncan's received a lot of criticism in regards to previous fights and maybe not being the fighter that he was portrayed to be, but that's not his fault. Like, it was the public portraying him to be something that, you know, maybe didn't work out to how the public perceived it, but he is still a good fighter. He has got good qualities. And I think this is a fight for him stylistically where he doesn't have to deal with takedowns. He can stay striking. He's fighting more of a static opponent. He can be the elusive mover in and out of range, pick him apart, fire from the outside, come in at strange angles. I think it really suits this fight for Leroy Duncan. So for those reasons, I'm picking Christian Leroy Duncan to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. I know I did say it was going to be short and sweet, but it's ended up pretty much the same length as all the others with extra fights. I've just spent a little bit more time on a few more fights in this fight, on this card, on this podcast, because I do genuinely think it's going to be a really good event on paper. There's some really, really good fights. I think we're going to be very pleasantly surprised on the night, shall we say. And remember, I'll go over it just once again. If you are wanting to jump into the betting action this weekend, look no further than MMA Play 365. There's got something for absolutely everybody on the site. It's all affordable. $5 for a next event, for one event. Or we've got $10 a month, or it's $99 for the year. So again, everything's affordable, everything's fun, there's plenty in there for everybody, whether you're a long-term gambler looking to beat the books in the correct way using betting theory, whether you're a fun gambler, whether you're interested in AI and want to follow the AI's predictions, we've got something in there for everybody. That's MMAPlay365.com. Make sure you check that out before UFC Vegas 87 this weekend. And from my perspective, that's all from me. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing to the YouTube channel, for listening, for your comments, replies. I'm Newsom, and I'll see you again next week.